Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
You're listening to We Love Movies on Spin 103.8. Very shortly, Brian Lloyd and Rory Cashin will be here to review Atomic Blonde. But let us hear now from the film's star, Charlize Theron. Or Charlize Theron, really, I suppose. Is that the way you pronounce it? Here she is telling us on being excited about the potential of her character, Lorraine, in the film.
But there was something about this woman, Lorraine, that really sparked something for me. I don't know why exactly. I don't know if I can articulate it. I just saw an incredible amount of potential in exploring her through this journey. And I think that was the first thing that made me go, there's something here. I'm excited about this.
Here is Charlize Theron once again telling us about her character Lorraine's will to win and working with director David Leitch, who has helmed the likes of John Wick, and he's currently filming Deadpool 2, so he's very much an action director in demand.
But I think ultimately what's great about her is that she just really wants to win more than the other guy in the room, and I love that about her character. And I think that comes to play in not just the physical stuff, but just even her emotional journey. There's something about her that she has to win. She has to survive. She wants it really badly.
Lorraine Broughton, an expert in escape and evasion. Proficient in intelligence collection.
Let's cut the crap, shall we?
And hand-to-hand combat. It's an impressive set of skills.
Talents can be overrated.
But he just came in with such a visual and such an idea of what he wanted the heart of this film to be and what he wanted it to look like. And it was brave, and it was refreshing, and it was provocative, and it was thought-provoking, and at moments it was uncomfortable, and all of that stuff made me just kind of, you know, inside jump up and for joy, because I knew we found our guy. I knew he was the person that I wanted to make this movie with, no matter what.
Joining me now to review Atomic Blonde is Rory Cashin and Brian Lloyd. Brian, I turn to you first. I know you're over the phone there.
In the shower.
Some interesting noises going on there in the background. Brian, plot-wise, what is happening with Atomic Blonde?
Charlize Theron plays an MI6 agent called Lorraine Broughton, who is being debriefed by her superiors. She's telling the story in reverse. She was sent to East Berlin, just like a couple of days before the fall of the wall. And she has to make contact with the local station chief, played by James McAvoy. She's trying to recover a list of agents who are deep undercover in the Soviet Union. And all while this is happening, there are other things going on in East Germany and East Berlin that may or may not relate to James McAvoy and other, you know, KGB agents in the area.
It's a convoluted tale.
Very convoluted.
I was like, at the end of it, I was like, wow, that was the most complicated way of telling
a very simple story.
Simplest plot ever. It's like, there's a mole, and at the end of it, it's like, that's the mole. But like, by the time you get there, it was like, who was everyone again?
It goes all around the houses. Before we get more into it, here's a little bit from the trailer to Atomic Blonde.
He had an atomic bomb of information. Find out who's hunting our operatives and trust no one.
David Persons, your contact.
Welcome to Berlin. I'm David.
Don't shoot. I've got your shoe. You're
personal, Jesus. That was me from the moment my feet touched the ground.
This was never part of the plan.
It was part of mine.
I've lost the target.
What do you know about this woman who's been following me?
You look like you need saving.
So you made contact with the French operative?
Obviously.
The clock is ticking, and everyone you get close to ends up dead.
Someone set me up. Someone from the inside. Now, this only ends one way. A bullet.
A little bit there from the trailer to Atomic Blonde. Roy Cashin and Brian Lloyd are with me to review the film. We were just getting into one of the film's biggest downfalls. At times, Rory, it felt like... It's like Guy Ritchie had written the script because it gets so convoluted. It's almost like Guy Ritchie wanted to write a John le Carré type.
This was Guy Ritchie's Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. Yeah. It was so confusing, but also beautiful to look at. At the start of the film, I was like, right, that's the villain. And then it goes through all these twists and turns and very convoluted plot 180s. And at the end, it was like, oh, I was right. I guessed it like within 2 seconds. I was like, yeah, okay.
Because I thought as well, no, it can't be that simple. It can't be. And it really was that simple. So that is the big downfall, that it's way too overly complicated and convoluted for its own good. It kind of ties itself up in knots. Brian, what are the positives to be taken out of Atomic Blonde?
Oh, there are loads of them. I mean, the fact that the action is incredibly, incredibly well choreographed. Charlize Theron is brilliant. I mean, she really just does give 100% in this. Like, I mean, she's bouncing herself off the wall. And the way that David Leitch directs it as well is that, you know, when you look at certain action films, or most action films for that matter, you know, there'll be a cutaway or something like that, and you'll see the stunt player kind of come in and take the fall or take the bump. That doesn't happen in this. Like, there's one brilliant, I think it's about nearly 10 minutes, like this 10-minute continuous shot.
In the stairwell.
The stairwell thing. Yeah, exactly, where she's trying to get Eddie Marsden's character out of the building, and it goes on for about 10 minutes. And, like, I'm sure there are cuts in it, like, you know, when it moves in and moves out or whatever, but it looks like it's one continuous shot. And you can see Charlize Theron in all of it, you know?
That is a standout scene. Do you know what else I have to say as well, Brian, is the soundtrack. Now, you're a man who loves a little bit of 80s, like, synth.
Does he?
Loves it. Loves
it. He's never mentioned that.
And this has a real new wave feel. Just before we get Brian's take, and I just want to hear Theron talking about the soundtrack to Atomic Blonde.
You know, I think all of us wanted it to feel... surprising in the element of a soundtrack. So there are parts of it that is, yes, very nostalgic, and there's parts of it that's super eccentric and based on a lot of like Euro 80s classics that we know. And I love that part of it. I think the soundtrack plays a really important role in place and time, and you always kind of know where you are. And there's a lot of emotion that I think comes from a lot of those songs. And I myself didn't even know that a lot of those songs were written during that period, and they were really about the fall of that wall and this ideology that had to kind of, you know, get quelled and stilled and silenced. And the first time, you know, the first time somebody told me that about Under Pressure, I had no idea that that was written about the fall of the wall. So a lot of those songs just kind of lend themselves perfectly to the storytelling of this movie.
So, Brian, we were just saying there before we heard from Charlize Theron that I keep saying either Theron or Theron.
Theron, apparently.
I keep making a hames of that. But what did you think of the soundtrack, the 80s vibe?
I know, it's incredible. And like, what's funny about it as well is that it actually works parallel to, you know, it works parallel to the film. You know, that's what it's kind of like the way Baby Driver uses music, it uses it in the same way. Like, there's another big action set piece where she turns on a father figure, George Michael's father figure, and lets it play for the whole song while she's beating the crap out of these like Stasi agents. And like, there's a scene in it where she like, where she wraps like this garden hose around a guy's neck and then jumps off the balcony. This is all while George Michael's, you know, father figure is playing Blast Now. And then there are other parts of it where, you know, it just kind of, it plays in the background and is just used as part of the editing, you know. Again, very much like Baby Driver. But another thing that I found really, I really did like about it, and Rory kind of touched on this, was just how good looking it was. Like, it was really, you know, it had that really beautiful, clean, neon look, almost kind of like, you know, like Michael Mann did in Manhunter, you know, that kind of way. Like, that really kind of, that really blocked, clean colours, you know?
Yeah, no, it's very stylish.
And, yeah,
like, just really, really stylish, yeah. But like you say, having, you know, all these positives aside, the story is complete muck. So your enjoyment of the film is kind of based on the fact of, if you can kind of forget about the terrible script and the terrible story and just focus on all the, you know, the visuals and the music and the style, you can appreciate it more.
I actually just wanted, Rory, more action. Because bearing in mind David Leitch made John Wick, and by the end of it, a friend of mine just thought that was amazing. And I said, you know what? I just thought when it got into the spy thriller side of it, and I won't keep harping on about the film getting overly complicated, but I wanted more action sequences like the stairwell, like the scene with the hose.
Because it was sold on that. It was sold on the action sequences. It is being sold, whether by them or by, you know, whomever, as a female John Wick. And John Wick is mostly wall-to-wall action sequences. And in this, I counted three.
Yeah.
There's three fights in this, and the film is 2 hours long. And as Brian said, one of them is nearly 10 minutes long, but like the other two, maybe 5 minutes each. That's still an hour and 40 minutes of people talking complicatedly about a plot that is not that complicated. It is beautiful to look at. The soundtrack is great. Theron is great in it. I didn't think everyone else was up to it because it felt like everyone was so... Now, I know they have to be distant and cold because they're spies, but because you couldn't warm to anyone, I was a bit like, meh. About anyone else, where did they live or die? I was like, I don't actually really care.
There's not very much characterization when it comes to Theron's Lorraine character. She is just frosty.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah, like she does an awful lot with like small looks. Like when she finds that the guy who turns out wasn't Robert Pattinson, but looks exactly like him, is killed really early on in the film.
Yeah.
And you can tell, oh, there's obviously some kind of history between them because she gives it away with like a teeny tiny look at the beginning. Mm. And she can do an awful lot, but everyone else, like John Goodman, Toby Jones, Sophia Boutella, like they were all fine, but there was no, like, if anyone had waded in and just killed them all, I don't know if I would have cared that much.
Before we get scores, Brian, would you be keen on an Atomic Blonde 2? Has it done well enough to warrant a sequel anyway in the States?
I think it has, yeah. I mean, it's gotten a lot of positive response to it, but you say, I think if they do end up making a sequel, and I'm not 100% sure they will, but if they do, I think they're definitely going to have to get a better writer. Because the guy that did this is a guy called Kurt Johnstadt, who wrote the screenplay for 300. And like 300 as well, you know, if you can put aside the terrible script, it looks incredible. You know, that kind of way. Like, it looks incredible. It has a real big, strong visual palette and beautiful, you know, looks really cool and really, you know, great music and so on. But the script is terrible, so I think if they got a better screenwriter at it for a sequel, they'd have a better shot of making it happen, you know?
Rory, this summer, has it been one of note for strong female action roles?
Oh. Well, let me think. Aside from Wonder Woman, let me think. Was there anyone else?
Just try it. Yeah, there's Ghost in the Shell that kind of came
out.
That
was crap, though. Yeah. No, not really. I guess, like, because Wonder Woman was great, and it's great to see, because what I loved about the fight scenes in this is, as much as Charlize Theron's character is so obviously very well trained at fighting, but she is, in all respects, still a small woman. So, like, a punch by her is not going to be the same as a punch by a big, burly Stasi agent to the head. So, during the fight scene, she was picking up everything from the floor, just chucking it at heads. And it's like, that's exactly what you would do if you are smaller than the person you're fighting. You're just going to pick up.
Yeah.
At one point, it's like a hot plate and she just bounces it off the dude's head.
She
was
great.
She was so good.
Go on, and there's some great behind the scenes stuff on YouTube about the making of the film and her training regime. And they said that David Leitch, the director, and his second unit director as well, they were saying when they saw how good Theron was in the training side of it, because she spent like 6 months preparing for the role, they went, you know what? We don't have to do that many edits. We can do a lot of this in camera, continuous takes as well. So well worth checking. And also check out the interview, the unscripted interview with herself and David Leitch for Movie Phone. The guy, I have to say, he's a little bit intimidated, the director, with Charlize Theron.
Oh, really?
Well worth
it. You would be. It's Charlize Theron.
You know what I mean? Okay, so let's get scores. Rory, out of 10.
6, I think. Like, we went back and forth about the pros and cons, but I think because there's just so little action and so much of that plot that this didn't work.
Yeah.
It just was not as good as I was really hoping it would be.
Oh, okay.
But I'd love to see a sequel with more action and less of that script.
Yeah, I would too. I think that definitely warrants a second film. Brian, you, what do you think out of 10?
I'd give it, I think if you can get over the bad screenplay, it's an 8 out of 10. But if the bad screenplay keeps playing on your mind, it's a 5 or a 6, you know? Mm. I think it's kind of contiguous on, you know, whether or not you can get old, if you can forgive the bad script.
Yeah, I'd meet you in the middle. I'd give it a 7 out of 10. Yeah, it just could have been so much better. Gentlemen, thank you so much for that. Rory and Brian will be back as we'll be reviewing Annabelle Creation.